Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
I was supposed to be in Spain right now, going from Madrid to San Sebastian. It was going to be my kids' first trip to Europe. It was a trip that I was excited about and also dreading, because two children in Europe, you never know how that's going to go. But instead, here I am spending my air quote summer vacation in Northern Virginia at my in-laws' house. I am currently recording this in a screened-in porch. I can hear insects around me. I hear the occasional firework around me. Not exactly as I planned my summer vacation to go, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that, but I thought this week, why not commiserate? Why not talk about summer vacations that can be summer vacations that maybe aren't, but we wish they were, here on Hot Takes on a Plate on the Believe Podcast Network. And joining me is my friend Purvesh Shalwani, who I know is a lover of travel and, of course, a lover of food. Currently works at CNN, worked for the Daily Beast, and, of course, was a colleague, I guess. Now, I always get confused with the word colleague, Purvesh, because I hear people use it as in coworker, but also use it as somebody who works in the same field as you, Ed, which is what you did when you were at Newsday. You were their original host of their Feed Me TV. I guess rival might be the better word to describe it.
Cohorts. We were cohorts.
Cohorts. There we go. Cohorts. Doing food, video, storytelling on Long Island. And Purvesh, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. So I heard you're going to be in, you were supposed to be in Spain. I was supposed to be in Greece this week. It's supposed to be my second week in Greece with family. So here
that's actually what I was going to ask. My first thing I was going to ask you is, did you have any big trips canceled this summer? You just told me Greece.
We were supposed to go to Greece last week. We were supposed to be there for 2 weeks, including this week. And that's not happening.
Had you ever been to Greece?
Funny, I had not been to Greece until I met my wife, and my wife goes to Greece literally almost every year. With her father's been going since forever.
They're not Is she Greek? Oh no! Okay, that's just their thing.
It's his thing, and he teaches these workshops every year there on psychology, and he leads these groups there, and then they just stay for another week, and then we've gone and joined them. Let's see, when child was 2 and then again 3, we were there. Although that said, the second time around we were there for a wedding, and we were supposed to go this year. The second child hasn't been, and he's just gonna have to wait.
I mean, I've never been to Greece. The closest I've come is Croatia, which is just such, if you've ever, it's a magical place. I picture the coastlines being very similar, with the rocky beaches and the crystal clear water and all that amazing fresh grilled seafood.
We almost made it to Croatia while we were there. We were in Corfu, and we just couldn't make it work. So,
well, you're lost, but you were in Greece, so that's fine. So what are you doing instead? Any other plans this summer?
So we're moving upstate. I know it's, but we're moving upstate next week. So that's our big plans this summer. We're not doing much of anything.
Has the New York Times contacted you for a piece I'm sure they're working on about Brooklynites moving upstate?
they have not contacted me yet about Brooklynites moving upstate. But, once we do, who knows what could happen. So,
well, here on Hot Takes on a Plate, you, the listener, gets to eavesdrop on the ultimate food fights as I debate my culinary world friends and other eating enthusiasts in their areas of expertise. And so, Purvesh, I'm going to throw some hot takes at you as they pertain to food and travel and kind of centered around the time that we're in right now.
I didn't realize we were going to be debating, but I'm ready for it.
It's debate-ish. We'll start with hot take. I'll throw it out. Wait, you said you listened to the podcast. How did you not know there'd be a debate?
I call it friendly banter. Debate strikes me as two people that are, at opposite ends of a spectrum. I don't know.
I mean, look, here's the deal. It's all sort of a send up on the idea of hot takes as it is. I mean, I think if you listen to enough shows, you realize that it's kind of a send up on it. I mean, I'm not. you know, I'm not Stephen A. Smith. I'm not you know, Skip Bayless here. I'm just the guy who's having some fun. Unless you listen to last week's, that one got a little hot. I did throw out my hottest take, which is that ketchup is delicious on a hot dog.
Oh my God. So and yes, I'm a Chicago guy, so we don't put ketchup on anything, especially not hot dogs, dude.
Well, look, hot dogs for me are childhood. Ketchup is childhood. This idea that if it was good when you were a kid, now it's not. I don't subscribe to that, you know? And also if you just break it down, I mean, ketchup, it is sweet and it is acidic and it is tangy, and a hot dog is rich and salty. And that makes sense when you combine those two things.
There's so many other great things you can put on a hot dog to cut that fat.
But childhood memories.
My thing with the ketchup is once you put ketchup on something, it pretty much ruins the taste of anything else that, you know, that is associated with that food. All you taste at that point is ketchup. All you taste afterwards is ketchup. It's the ketchup that lingers.
I mean, honestly, the only things I eat ketchup on are hot dogs and French fries. That's it. Like, I don't eat ketchup on burgers. I don't eat ketchup on, you know, anything else. That's it. Anyway, I digress.
You're not going to have a fight for 2 weeks in a row about ketchup.
No, but I could literally make it something I ask every single person on the show. All right. Well, first thing I'm going to throw at you, since we're talking about New Yorkers, we are a New York centric show. A popular place in general to get away in the summertime, if you're a New Yorker, is the East End of Long Island, specifically the Hamptons. And especially this year, since us Americans, we're not allowed anywhere outside our country pretty much at this point. And, you know, look, a lot of people were heading to the Hamptons pre-summertime, you know, people when COVID hit, you know, who have the means were going out that way to get more space. And if you ask me, I have always thought the Hamptons are overrated. Like, I just don't get it. Like, the price that you pay, because I've looked into like going like for a weekend or this or that, and I go, oh my gosh, like the amount it costs just to like rent like a really crummy hotel room. You could go to Europe. Like, I'm not kidding you. Like, it's insane. And for what? Gosh,
you're there this past weekend for sure.
Like, what are you paying for exactly? Like, I don't even think, like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't even think the food is like that top notch out in the Hamptons. I mean, if I'm going to go to the East End and eat, I'm going to the North Fork. There's 100%. Better eating in the North Fork, better 100%. Produce, more vineyards. I mean, all those
it's a cooler scene.
Totally. So hot take being Hamptons overrated. And if you're going to go out there, definitely do the North Fork. Tell me I'm right. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're right. You're 100% right. In my first year when I was a restaurant critic at Newsday, I had to go spend an entire weekend in the Hamptons doing some reviews. I was the one who was unfortunate enough to do the EMP Summer House, the 11 Madison Park Place review for Newsday. By far the best meal I had that weekend. But like the times I spent in the Hamptons, I mean, the Hamptons reminds me of the Upper East Side. It's like overpriced food. And it's all about the scene, and people will go to restaurants where the food is terrible and tell you the food is great. And I'm like, are you eating the same thing I'm eating? You know, there's a beautiful restaurant out there. I don't know if it still exists now or not, but Wolfer Estates, the Gatorade of the Hamptons. They hate when people call it the Gatorade of the Hamptons, but,
I thought that was Montauk Brewing.
No. That might be the new Gatorade of the Hamptons.
That's the Gatorade of Brooklyn in the summertime.
Yeah. Montauk didn't even really used to be considered the Hamptons. Like, you know,
that was the Brooklyn to the Hamptons Upper East Side, as you say. That working class Montauk is not working class any longer. It hasn't been for a very long time.
Long time. Yep. Though that said, there is one restaurant out in Montauk that I really want to try. It's the Justin Smiley restaurant. You know, okay. He's out there and I'm forgetting the name of the hotel now. I can look it up. But he's out there doing cooking at this. I went to look up how much the hotel was. It's $600 a night. I'll never be going out there. But he's out there cooking, and his photo. One, he's an excellent chef. He used to run this restaurant called Upland here in New York City. He just went back to Il Buco Elementari. That's what he started. he every time I've eaten one of his meals, it's fabulous. And supposedly he, and not even supposedly, he is out there cooking at this new restaurant at this new hotel out in Montauk. So that seems promising.
But yeah, in general, the Hamptons, I mean, to me, it's for people who have a lot of money, who work the kind of jobs where they can't get away. And so it's close enough where they can have their little bubble world, if you will, and they can spend the summer and telecommute and do whatever. And for regular folk like you and me, I just don't see where we fit in there. Like, for the price, I mean, gosh, like you said, like $600 for a hotel room. And what exactly do you get from that hotel room? Like, you know, I put me on a plane and send me somewhere cool, you know?
Sure. I can get down with that. I can get down with that. You know, there's the North Fork, man.
The North Fork. I'll tell you my favorite restaurant there. And look, it's new ownership now, so I have not been back. I can't judge. Not exactly.
Okay.
The North Fork's food truck is my favorite restaurant on the North Fork. North Fork Table and Inn is great, but that food truck, that to me is like, it epitomizes summer. You got the picnic tables, you know, the fresh air, especially during COVID, like what would be better? And it's all the things you want to eat, but done really well. Lobster rolls, hot dogs, they got great pulled pork, you name it. Like the North Fork's food truck is, have you had it? It's legit.
I have not been
so
to the
good
food truck. I need, that's going to have to be the tops on my list if I make it out there this summer.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it. And you know, back when, I don't know if she's still involved or not, Claudia Fleming, I obviously it was sold not too long ago, but back in the day, like I'd go out there and Claudia, James Beard award winning pastry chef, one of the greatest pastry chefs in the world, would be working the food truck because that's how she rolls. Like, it's no joke. She rolls up her sleeves and she gets to work. And so, always cool.
Since we're talking about food trucks, does the Eight Hands Farm still have its food truck?
I don't know.
Excellent food truck.
I would imagine if you're a farm, you got to have a good food truck. I would hope.
I would hope so too. but yeah, Eight Hands Farm, that's a perfect example of a place where, you know, it's the best of all worlds. You get some of the best meat. You have this guy who's the butcher there, who's also a charcuterie maker. Nobody does charcuterie, or very few people do charcuterie anymore. And he's doing it all from scratch with meat from the farm. So,
and I think McCary, their vineyard, I think they have a pizza truck out there that was supposedly very, very good, like legitimate wood fired pizzas.
Yes.
So lots of good food trucks definitely out on the North Fork. Okay. Next hot take to throw your way. Now, obviously you said you're moving upstate. A lot of city folk are going to take vacations and they're looking, or they're buying homes or renting homes in the Hudson Valley or the Catskills. And the thing that kills me about it is how those areas were overlooked until the hipsters found them. You know, once the hipsters came, you know, the Catskills were forgotten about since the Borscht Belt, but then the hipsters came along and it was like, ooh, the Catskills. And those places always had beautiful nature and all the things that people love. But then, of course, the hipsters came and then the restaurants came and that's all fine and dandy. But my hot take is if you're going to head north for a road trip vacation this year, skip the Catskills, skip the Hudson Valley, because I mean, the restaurant scene is probably not going to be as prevalent a player as it would usually be. Odds are you're probably going to cook in more and grill. So why not go to Lake George? Why not go to the Finger Lakes? Why not go to Maine? Go somewhere more secluded. Go somewhere where you can save a little money because it's probably not as in demand. That's my hot take. Tell me I'm right. Tell me I'm wrong.
I don't know. I do love the Hudson Valley, my friend. And there are some beautiful homes up there to be.
Hey, I'm a Hudson Valley native, so it's not a diss against the Hudson Valley. I just think it's funny I grew up in Dutchess County, so okay. I grew up in Fishkill, and you know, my parents now currently live in Highland, and they used to live in Hopewell Junction, and I get it. It's just funny because it was never cool. And then Dia Beacon and Beacon became like this thing. And it's hysterical to me because I remember the before.
I mean, like, look, even Woodstock is, you know, where my wife grew up, is it sort of jumped the shark at this point. But like, I don't know, some of the lakes up there and the swimming holes and, you know, you're not that far from New York City. You can go up there for the day and you can come back the same day. Like, you go to a place like Rhinebeck and there's this place called Abu's Falafel and it's fabulous, you know, and you get takeout falafel and you just keep going. Or, yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, look, I love Maine too. I can eat, like, my challenge in Maine is try to not eat lobster for every meal of every day. Like, you know, even lobster omelets, I'm like all of a sudden being like, yeah, I need that.
So. have you been to Portland? You've been to Portland.
Oh, I love Portland.
What's your favorite restaurant in Portland?
Oh my God. It's been so long since I've been to Portland. I can't even remember what restaurants, you know, that are up there that I've been to. It's been a long time.
You know, what's funny is I went there for my 40th birthday with some guys and we rented a house and we just like ate and ate and ate. And I don't want to diss a restaurant, but there was a restaurant that we ate at that had made Bon Appetit's top 10 restaurants in America list that year. And it was the most underwhelming place we ate at the entire week.
Huh.
They were known for their like roast chicken. And I'm like, I've had a better roast chicken at Perennial in Garden City. Like,
wow.
Like straight up. So, and by the way, that's a Perennial, you know, sad that it closed recently because that was a fantastic Long Island restaurant.
I knew them when they were in New York City.
Fantastic.
They're fabulous people.
Yeah, absolutely. But
hear it they closed, but I'm sad to hear that.
What was the restaurant? Now I'm drawing a blank myself. There was a restaurant in Portland that was easily my favorite one. It was like this hipster Asian place. It's owned by the people that own Eventide. And I'm drawing a blank on it right now, but it was like that place that it was like on my list, but like kind of like a secondary place on my list. Of places to go, but it was everything else was crowded and we went there and it was so good. And I'm literally, this is the fun about podcasts. I'm literally Googling the restaurant right now while we're talking, because why not? This is podcasting. Honey Paw.
Yeah, I am definitely, if I do make it somewhere this summer, it is going to be Portland because I have a really good buddy of mine who owns a house on an island right off the coast there. So we might go visit him. So that there's a good chance we could end up in Portland where we'll do some serious eating.
Yeah.
So.
Dine at the Honey Paw.
Okay.
That was a really fantastic place. Also a place, one of my favorite places actually in Westchester now has a Portland, Maine branch, believe it or not, Kohl's, C-O-A-L-S.
If they have a place in Westchester.
It's a pizza place. They have two of them, Bronxville and Portchester, and it's that Providence style grilled pizza.
You lost me on grilled pizza.
Really?
I will give it a shot.
Oh, it's so good. It's they take the dough and they let it sit in olive oil, and when they stretch it out and grill it, it almost plays like paratha. Like it gets like almost, even though it's grilled, it's almost like, because it's in oil, it gets almost like fried, if you will. So it's thin and it's crisp and so it's like super light.
As chewy as a pizza would be.
It's not super chewy, but it's like super light. Like you could just demolish like what looks like an entire pie.
The photos look good. I'm looking at it now. You convinced me to start Googling. So
yes. Oh, also underrated. They do a fantastic burger. Just simple burger, but like really good.
Get on there. What's with pizza places doing burger? Emily here in New York.
Yeah, they've always been good for burger. Oh, and craft beer. They have really, really well curated selection of craft beer. They do a great job with craft beer.
I'm going to put that on my list of places that we need to stop at when we're going up and down from the Hudson Valley. So
we're talking travel here on Hot Takes on a Plate. And my next hot take is
real quick. You're talking about your 40th birthday.
Yes.
That my 40th birthday might be the pinnacle of my life. So my wife somehow was able to pull off the surprise of surprises. For my bachelor party, I really wanted to go to Opie de Cachan. I wanted to go to Montreal. I could not convince any of my friends to go to. What place feels more bachelor party than go to a Pied de Cachon?
Okay, right? So when you're done with this, you just segued into another segue. I've got a bachelor party Montreal story. Go on.
So, you know, I wouldn't want to go to Pied de Cachon forever. I wanted, you know, the pig head to show up at the table and the duck in a can to show up at the table. Like, I just wanted to have this like epic eating night for my bachelor party. We ended up going to Zaha for my bachelor party. It was wonderful. You know, I'm friends with Michael Solomonov. He totally hooked it up. We had magnums of kava. It was amazing.
Rough meal.
I'm actually shooting an episode of Feed Me. We're at Penn Station. And we wrap up and I'm supposed to go away for the weekend. My wife picks me up and we start driving. And I have an inkling of like, you know, we're probably going to Canada. I don't know why, but you know, or to Montreal. But like, you know, I hadn't been convinced. Finally, we get in the car, we start driving and she tells me we're going to Montreal. So we go to Montreal. I didn't know we were going to Pied de Cachon. I also didn't know who was coming. So we get to Montreal, we check into our Airbnb. And we're doing all this wonderful eating and just people are just showing up. And I'm like, oh my God, you invited like every single one of my friends. Like there's 20 of my friends. And finally she orders a limo. And we get in a limo and she couldn't get us a reservation at Pied de Cachon. Instead she got us a reservation at Sugar Shack. But the only reservation that was, oh, it gets better. So the only reservation she was able to get at Sugar Shack was the kitchen.
Now, now set the scene. So for people who don't know what Sugar Shack is, in fact, if you don't know what Sugar Shack is, this is what you should do after you listen to this podcast. Go on Netflix, watch the latest season of, is it Somebody Feed Phil? Am I getting the name of the show right? With Phil Rosenthal. Yeah. And he actually goes to Sugar Shack with my friend Jeff Gordonier, and it's That's hysterical right. and it's tremendous. And so make sure to check that out. But it's gluttony. Yet. It's gluttony.
Oh,
describe it.
It was unreal. So Sugar Shack, it's an old Sugar Shack, which is, you know, where they tap maple trees and they get maple syrup and then they, you know, they process it for,
which
you
is
know.
A massive thing in Montreal. Like maple syrup is huge in Quebec.
There's a maple syrup tree probably in everybody's backyard tap. Like people are just making it in their own house. That's how much maple syrup there is up there. Vermont too, and I'm sure Northern New York. So we arrive at the restaurant, we walk in, I can't believe we're going, like, I was like, okay, this restaurant's amazing. I had no idea we had the chef's table. So we walk in, there's 15 of us at the chef's table. And we're seeing everything. It's literally happening all right in front of us. And it's unreal. And then the hostess walks up and she's like, okay, she points to a wall and she says, pick your weapon. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And she pulls out a bottle of champagne, a magnum of champagne. And so we're about to savor this bottle of champagne, I realize. So I pick the cleaver, we go out back, and I saber the bottle of champagne.
Nice. Had you ever sabered?
My wife and I are obsessed with sabering.
This is just like what you do in your backyard in Brooklyn. You just saber.
There might be multiple videos on my Instagram of savoring of bottles of champagne. It's a little bit ridiculous. I never savored a bottle of champagne until I met my wife, and now it's just like we savor a lot of bottles of champagne.
And you know what? Hey, look, if you ever like, you know, like if you need like home protection, you have the saber to. It's like it looks like a machete, kind of like, you know. It's a great defense thing.
No, you can just do it with really really heavy chef's knife. You should go watch. People should go. You should Google savoring a bottle of champagne. This person tries to do it on air, and I forget if it's some local TV channel, and supposedly some sort of expert. And two bottles she tries to do, and the bottles shatter. What they realize afterwards, because they've been sitting under the hot light, they've got warm, and that's why the bottles were shattering.
Wow. Okay, so you're in Sugar Shack. You're sabering bottles of champagne. You got 15 friends at a chef's table.
Yeah, and the same with Sugar Shack. The chefs spend. They're only open for a few months out of the year, not open the whole year. And the chefs go spend some time in some far off place, learning the food and the cuisine there and eating there, and then they come back and they apply whatever's local to the meal you're going to have. And so they had been in Southern Italy, I want to say. And the food was just, it was just outrageous. The one thing I take away is like, I mean, these guys definitely have a lot of character. They were making this, they were glazing this tart and they had put it on a record player. And so they were letting it spin on the record player, and that's how they were, that's how they were putting the pastry cream on it.
You know, Montreal, it's funny because you mentioned bachelor party. I actually, my sister-in-law's now husband, who I love, had his bachelor party in Montreal a few years ago, and he is a good decade younger than me. So I was like the cool old man on the trip. But given that my job was food, I was put in charge of the epic dinner for that weekend. And it turns out I had a friend who was a restaurateur in Westchester who just happened to own a restaurant in the W Hotel in Montreal, which no longer exists. It was called Etre avec toi, eat. And he did this thing called the Eat Feast. What is the Eat Feast, you ask? The Eat Feast it starts with seafood towers. And then there is a suckling pig roast. And you go into the kitchen as a group and you toast with champagne in the kitchen with the chef, the pig, before it gets carved up. And you and there's unlimited craft beer. And it was a time to be had. And I won't get into the rest of the details of that weekend. I will say this. I will share this detail. It did come up at dinner that everybody in the group, and by the way, there were 23 guys on this trip. Just wrap your head around that. 23 dudes. In Montreal, all a decade younger than me. It did come up that they wanted Montreal bagels. Everybody goes to Montreal and has the bagels. They're different than New York, and they're legendary. So I get up. Now, sleeping in for me, you can relate to this, Pervez, because you're a dad of young children. Like, I slept in. Sleeping in is like 9:30. Like, that's sleeping in. That's like a luxury. So I go out. I fetch bagels. I get 4 dozen bagels for the group. Bring him back to the hotel. People don't start waking up till 11:30, noon, you know. Right. So we break out the bagels. We eat the bagels. Somebody goes, after we're done, what do we do next? So I'm going, I don't know. What are we going to do? Like, let's get outside, right? Let's get on a boat. Let's do something. Let's go get brunch. I'm like, what? And you want to know where we went for brunch? Great Expectation.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So that was the crew I was hanging with, just letting you know. But anyway, the reason I tell this story about Montreal and about the feast is because what it did was it also, besides just loving that city to begin with, it actually led to the most fun episode of Restaurant Hunter I ever did, which was I was able to talk my bosses into a Montreal road trip. And we went to Etre avec toi. And we recreated the Eat Feast. And my friend Peter Chase, who was the owner of the place, may have brought in some models to sit at the table with us and a DJ when we did the scene. And it was the most gonzo thing I have ever done in my career. But that city has got... And we went to Montreal Plaza, which was just on somebody feed fill, which that place is wild. And I have such love for Montreal, and I wish we could go right now, but I'm pretty sure we're not allowed in Canada. Are we at this point?
I'm Canadian and I'm not allowed in Canada. So
I didn't know you were Canadian.
I would have to, you can go. You just have to quarantine for 14 days. So
gotcha. Okay. Let me throw another hot take your way. And that is, I think it's a pretty obvious one, but then I go on Instagram and it doesn't seem very obvious. And that is that if I'm going to travel right now, I'm not going to any of these places that are COVID hotspots. Like, I'm not going to Florida. First off, I'm not getting on a plane right now. But sure. I'm not going to Florida. I'm not going to Texas. I'm not going to Arizona. I'm not going to California. But, like, I see people doing it. And I think that's insane. Tell me I'm right. Tell me I'm wrong. Am I crazy?
I don't think it's insane for the people who are traveling here to New York City from other places, you know? Like, I don't know. Like, all I can say is everything's a risk. Obviously, some things are higher risk than other risks. But, like, you know, the minute you leave your house, you're opening yourself up to risk. So, I don't know. I wouldn't be going to Florida. I wouldn't be going to Texas. I wouldn't be going to California. I'm surprised at the people. And not only that, if you're from New York and you're flying to Florida, California, Texas, or any other of the hotspots, when you come back, you got to quarantine for 14 days now.
I mean, I guess nobody's technically forcing you to, but still, like, why would you want to? Here's the thing. Okay, the other thing, the planes. If a restaurants can't fill their restaurants right now, 50% right. capacity, whatever, the planes are doing whatever they want. And I don't get it. Like, stale air on a plane next elbow to elbow with people that you don't know where they're coming or going.
100%.
Taking their mask off to, even if they have to wear their mask on the plane, they're taking it off to have their beverage, their snack. Like, heck no. Like, what is, this shouldn't even be allowed. Like America, here's the thing about America. We don't sacrifice well. We are bad at sacrificing, especially for the greater good. We want what we want and we want it now, dang it. And that is why we are where we are with COVID right now.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I'm getting worked up, I know, because I'm losing my mind with this.
I wouldn't get on a plane. Like, I have a hard time walking into a restaurant. Have you gone and eaten a meal anywhere yet?
Heck no.
Like, I can't do the same.
I mean, look, some people are eating
every weekend. I think, I don't know. We've been going to the beach every weekend.
I have been to the beach.
We went yesterday. We went the day before. We went last weekend. We went Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. We go to the beach a lot. And at the beach, you know, as you might remember, over at Reese Park, they're the Reese Park food bazaar now, and the Rockaway Clam Bar is back, and they have and we did it last weekend. It was, and I realized that was my first restaurant meal was at the beach bazaar. We ended up having some fried clams, and look, people are freaked out. I mean, you know,
but are there like servers, or is it like fast casual? Servers.
So the way they have it set up now is that I think there were only three or four stands they used to have were open. They made us. I think this is the rule there. If you're going to go and take one of the picnic tables, you have to order an alcoholic beverage.
Okay.
And so I was me and my two kids, and then a buddy of mine and his kid. Who, you know, we've agreed to be part of the bubble, or, you know, we've allowed them into our bubble. And we walk in, we sit down, but like, and then a server from each one of the establishments will come to you and take your order.
Okay.
Back on, you know, they encourage you to use, your phone or a tap card on the machine. So there's as little contact as possible. But like, you could see they were freaked out. I remember at one point somebody's like, you know, I stood up with my kid, because he stood up or whatever. And they're like, you have to sit back down. You have to put your mask on and sit back down. And I'm like, okay, this is where we are. So,
yeah. I mean, look, my thing, obviously dining outside is much safer than inside.
Sure.
And at this point I'm doing takeout, I'm doing delivery, I'm doing all of that. But My issue is, it's not the restaurants, it's the patrons.
Right.
So, you know, if all the servers are, and by the way, I'm sure you can hear fireworks behind me, of course, because, you know.
Shockingly, but you can hear fireworks behind me.
Oh, wow. There you go. So, you know, obviously the servers are going to be, well, they're supposed to be wearing masks. I have heard some stories of some places where they're not, believe it or not. But servers wearing masks, but going to tables where once you sit down, you're allowed to take it off.
Right.
And
you don't take your mask off.
And the thing is, what I think a lot of people fail to recognize is the mask protects the other person. It doesn't protect you as much. Right. So the server, by wearing a mask, is protecting you, the patron sitting down, the diner. But if you're not wearing your mask, you are putting that server in harm's way if you are asymptomatic or whatever. And right. So I can't really wrap my head around that right now. And so, you know, obviously I want to see restaurants succeed. I know you want to see restaurants succeed, but there is just sort of, I don't know. There's a danger level about all of this that I just, you know, I don't know. There's other ways to, I mean, you and I talked, you know, before we started the podcast about how much we love the Gumbo Bros, and they were doing crawfish boils. I think this past weekend was their last one. and or maybe it was 2 weekends ago. And I did 2 crawfish boils this season. You know, that's my way of supporting a place. And I brought it home and I had a little picnic in my dining room, you know.
But, you know, and he's done fairly well. But like his food also translates to takeout really
yes.
well.
Yes, yes, it does.
You can do takeout, no problem. And, you know, the crawfish boils help. But like, you know, I don't know how much staff he's able to support. I was talking to a buddy of mine today who's a chef, and he's saying like, look, you know, for up to us, we would keep the restaurant closed until it was safe to reopen. But like, you know, we have staff to support, and like, and the only way we can support that staff is by reopening. So they reopen with the patio. They're still doing takeout and they're doing, you know, these dinners. And like, this is the way that they can get their staff to come back.
I'm curious, as somebody who has, you know, been in food media, I have a very strong feeling right now about the fact that a lot of food media, and not all food media, because a lot of food media are not doing this, but a lot of food media, it feels like, and media in general, they're sort of being cheerleaders right now versus objective journalists. You know, obviously there are big exceptions to this. A lot of restaurant critics have penned pieces in the last couple of weeks saying, I'm a restaurant critic and I'm not dining out right now, and here's why. But on the flip side of that, a lot of the more local publications, if you will, I feel like they're going out there and they're going on their social media and showing you, oh, look at this place and look at that place, and they're open. And, you know, there's a local news channel that does like a thing that's, I think it's called like We're Open or something like right. that. And it's like, I understand, but also you have to be able to look at things with a critical eye, because you know, as much, it's a fine line. As much as we want businesses to succeed, we also don't want people getting sick. And you have to be able to show both sides of it. You can't just be a blind cheerleader.
Right. 100%. I think, you know, look, I think you need to follow the guidelines for what is to show the risks, not just to you, but to, you know, the places that you're visiting. But at the same time, like, look, if those places, you know, are willing to take the risks, and balance the risks and open up, then, you know, you present, these are the people that are willing to, you know, are willing to do that. So I think
the key is, like, if you're going to present the story, don't just say such and such is open. Show me how they're open. Right. Show me what their protocols are. You know, 100%. give credit to places that are doing it right.
Right.
I mean, I got takeout from Lucali a couple weeks ago. Sure. And I was blown away by like how they had this thing all set up. Like sure. You call in your pizza order, they tell you when to pick it up. Right. So they give you a time. So there's not like a ton of people waiting outside.
Right.
They have markers out on the sidewalk to show you how far apart you need sure. to be. They have plexiglass. They don't let you in at the door. There's plexiglass. So you're talking through plexiglass. So you, even if you're not wearing a mask, you can't spread germs to their employees. Sure. They're cash only, but they have a bucket that they slide under. So you're not actually physically handing somebody money.
Right.
You know, all those little things, I go, okay, they get it, you know? And that's the kind of stuff that I think should be highlighted. It shouldn't just be, look at this place, it's open, go eat there right now.
Right.
Uncritically.
Right. No, I mean, you know, I'd love to hear what restaurant critics think about like having to take that into account right now as they're reviewing places. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, you're not just taking into account how, you know, how they're sort of reinventing themselves in this atmosphere. You're taking into account how they're, you know, how, and like, look, that should be something, you're right, that is something that should be highlighted and celebrated, because guess what? You as the consumer also want to go to places that are thinking about
exactly, your product. Exactly. Exactly. It's important information. And, you know, I also am shocked at how some places handle their social media accounts right now and the things they put on there. I mean,
right.
You know, don't emphasize to me how much you're washing your hands and cleaning your kitchen, because you should have been doing that already.
Right.
You know, that's not like a new thing. Like show me the innovative ways you're keeping people safe. Right. Don't just tell me you're washing hands.
I hope you're washing your hands every time.
Right. Like that's not new. If that's new, oh boy, right. We got a problem.
You got a problem.
Well, Pervez, listen, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me here on Hot Takes on a Plate. And I hope you have a wonderful summer. And even though you're not going to Greece, I'm sure you'll have fun upstate.
I'm looking forward to it. Thank you for having me, my friend.
Absolutely. Hot Takes on a Plate is part of the Believe Podcast Network. That's BLEAV. Check them out at BLEAV.com. You can check me out on social media at Rob Patrone TV on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to the show, follow it, and leave a comment. If you're on Apple Podcasts, rate it 5 stars, of course. Till next time, I'm Rob Patrone. Ciao.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.